Blog Talk Radio.
General quarters. Security condition 3.
Thank you. Security 3, sir. General quarters 3. Intruder alert. GQ 3. Intruder alert.
Oh, we've got an intruder alert, all right. There's no joke about that. Hi, good evening, and welcome once again to Madame Perry Salon. I am your hostess and your cruise director and your friend, Madame Perry, but you can call me Jennifer or Jen. And we have had so much fun here lately. Last night, if you were on when Jay Smith was here, we had a very interesting discussion. I didn't know much about what it was, the subject was, once we got past Nexium and sex cults. Not that I'm an expert on that by any means, but it was kind of fun, or definitely fun. Anyway, just want to say that getting so many more subscribers and downloads and listeners, thanks to you, making the podcast grow, Madame Perry Salon is able to bring you more fascinating guests like we've had lately and like we have coming up very soon. And by the way, David Fischoff was on. He's the guy that created the idea, came up with the concept of the Ringo Starr All-Star Band, as well as the Rock and Roll Fantasy Camp. And remember before he said, if you sign up for Rock and Roll Fantasy Camp and tell him that Madame Perry sent you, he'll give you a $700 guitar when you get there. So, yeah, you want to go? Get that. But tonight is a guest returning, and this is one of the, this guy, I just put his name out there and get all kinds of response back. A thriller author. He's been praised by best-selling authors, big names, Hallie Efron, Steve Hamilton, Lou Burney, just to name a few. And we're going to talk about the latest book in his Detective Rick Cahill series. And so welcome to Madame Perry Salon. There's no one like this man, Matt Coyle. Matt, welcome back.
Thanks for having me. I thought there for a minute I wasn't going to be fully beamed up.
Well, you never know. I never know. And to be honest, I know it sounds... Can you hear me okay?
I hear you great.
Oh, good, good, good. And by the way, if you've tuned in with us, remember, you can talk to Matt Coyle. The number is 646-716-9922. 646-716-9922. Blog Talk Radio assures me that... that's a toll-free number in the continental U.S. So, I know I sounded a little rushed when you talked to me earlier. I was having to rush from, I'm going to be on this TV, working on this TV show Thursday night. And they didn't tell me give me the wardrobe thing until today. So I've got to rush out and get something. And then being Atlanta, Matt, I know you're near L.A., so you're used to all this big-time stuff, but Georgia's a pretty big place for TV and movie right now. So I've got to fight my way through all these trucks from the strip malls that are there because, Mark Wahlberg's here shooting a movie.
That's right.
I knew that. Let's get out of the way. I got Matt Coyle waiting on me, okay?
Well, actually, I have my own little podcast, Crime Corner, and as my listeners know, about half the time something screws up, and it's usually my fault. So I thought that for a minute there I brought some of my bad juju with me, but hopefully not.
Oh, no, 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 no. You only bring good juju here. And by the way, I was hoping to tell you this before the show so we could speak in private. But, you know, I figure if I go ahead and admit what I do, then it saves a lot of trouble. I think last time you were on, I kept calling the city La Jolla, but it's La Jolla.
Well, you're not the first.
Right?
It is La Jolla. Yeah.
It's like, well, I'm talking about this, he's talking about that. So it was like, and my face was red, but I'm used to that. So anyway, welcome back. And you've got a Blood Truth. And as soon as I put it, Blood Truth is the newest, the fourth, isn't it, in the Rick Cahill series?
It is. It's the fourth, yeah.
And I've already seen people posting on Facebook and social media that they have already read it and they loved it. And I said, well, I haven't finished it, so don't ruin it for me. And so I don't know where you wanted to start. You didn't have your fancy publicist send me any talking points, so we're going strictly organic, as we often do. And tell us where did Rick Cahill begin? Because he's become quite a popular character.
Where he began?
Where'd you get how'd you get started? Where did you dream up this guy? What was your inspiration?
I always knew I wanted to write mystery even as a kid. Start all the way back, I don't know, I was an early teen or maybe 12 or so, and my dad gave me The Simple Art of Murder by Raymond Chandler. And I've been reading crime ever since. And so I always knew that I wanted to write crime, but I had to figure out that you actually have to do the writing. It took me 30 years to figure out you actually have to do the writing to become a writer. So they always tell you to write what you know, at least initially. And I'm of Irish descent, so I know about guilt, regret, and unfulfilled potential. So I thought I'd go for the character that had some police background. I've got my brother-in-law was a cop for 33 years. His son's a cop, and his daughter's married cops. So I know a little bit about the police procedure when needed, but not enough. But so I wanted to write about a private detective, and it was kind of the first draft of the first book was kind of lighter than I really think I wanted it to be. And finally, when the first line of the book, the first book, Yesterday's Echo, came to me, the first time I saw her, she made me remember and she made me forget. It kind of locked in that this guy's a lot darker than I initially thought he was going to be, and he's got a history that he's kind of running from. He's also trying to make up for. So once that line came, I don't know where it came from. I got a feel on the character after months of really not knowing what I was doing. Still don't know what I'm doing, but 4 books in.
So you said you wanted to make him a little darker, like more like the film noir type detectives, or more like a Raymond Chandler?
Well, I read all Chandler's books and the short stories. That's my background for sure. So I'm sure I steal from him a bit, and probably Ross McDonald. Initially the book was more humor in it. It was kind of light I just didn't feel right. And then once it got a little darker, then it really started clicking for me. There's a guy named Alan Russell, who's a great writer, and he looked at the first poor guy. He had to look at the first writing of the first book at a writer's conference. He probably read 30 pages and gave me a critique. And he said, you know, you can write, but every author's first book, especially when you're writing first person like I do, they're very autobiographical. And once you divorce yourself from what you know, your real life, and just use the emotion of what's happened, but not real incidents, your writing will improve. And so I moved a lot further away from anything that I've ever experienced. Thus, Rick.
Now, I said film noir type of detective and Chandler, but Rick Cahill, your books are set in current times. Am I right?
Right.
Because I know they are, But did you read what I wrote on Instagram today about this?
I don't think I did. Sorry, I'm not hooked on Instagram.
Huh? Oh, okay. Yeah, no, I couldn't find you. I just said, looking for a solid Seamus, a private dick, a gumshoe with a Roscoe and a sap ready to track the can opener that heisted your cabbage. Well, keep your shirt on, because Matt Coyle is about the fresh caper featuring P.I. Rick Cahill, and he's giving the skinny on his latest book, Blood Truth, tonight on Madame Perry Salon, the podcast that puts you wise, dig? So I put the time, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. for you left coast types. And if you want to get on the horn, the number is 646-716-9922. I know, that's kind of a callback, but...
Well, maybe you could write the dust jacket for my next book, because that's better than anything I can work for.
Okay, I know you're teasing me, but I'm going to delight in that compliment for a long time, okay? So,
regarding the feeling of it being kind of Chandler's time, early in, I think when I was writing my first book in a writer's group, I had somebody thought that I actually was writing from an earlier time, and another person thinks that maybe I should. Maybe it's that the background of all the reading I did of early crime detective that stuff comes up, but I try to keep it contemporary with just a bit of a old-fashioned protagonist to it in some ways.
Mm-hmm. So you said it started out a little bit lighter, and then you sort of changed the feel a bit. And so give me some ideas. I know you've got a lot of cops in your family, and I used to work for the police department in DeKalb County, Georgia, and a lot of relatives, police officers. So you know that part. But like coming up with so you got all that solid, but these entanglements that Cahill gets into. Where do you come up with these? Because I read a lot of books, Matt, and I tell you what, there's a lot of books you think, guys, how many times is this plot going to be, rinsed out and used again? And your stuff is so fresh.
Well, thanks for that. I don't know if it is or not. I don't know if anybody writes anything fresh anymore, except for maybe Joe Ide and what he's come up with. But for me, it's the connect that Rick has to be connected to the case. He's a private eye 365 days a year, so the case. He's not emotionally connected to every case. So the ones I'm going to write about are the ones where he's drawn into them. And they don't necessarily start that way where he's drawn into them. But something will happen. Something will flip over. And then he's pulled in emotionally. And he takes it to heart, to his gut, that he has to find the truth in the matter and help the person who's hired him, if possible. And so from that, I find like an inciting incident where Rick will get pulled in. And then from that, really, I just I put him in situations where I try to have them make sense, but I also have where they have the most emotional pull for him. And so there's no grand scheme. I'm very unorganized writer. My subconscious does a lot of the work. So I just try to find the emotional hook. And then something, something that'll pull against him that makes sense and is not too ridiculous. Of course, some people will think some of the stuff's ridiculous because, maybe some of it doesn't make sense to everybody. But so for me, it starts with the character and his connection to what he's investigating, and then I just try to make it as real as possible. But to me, the most important thing is the emotion. And so if it's a difference between emotion and getting it exactly right, I'll probably go with the emotion, but I don't like to get things wrong.
Mm-hmm. You see, that's one reason why you're one of my favorite fiction writers, because I read a lot of biographies, memoirs and stuff, because, real people's lives take twists and turns, a lot of true crime, too. Real true crime comes with these twists and turns that if you wrote it into fiction, the editors would go, oh, no way, nobody's going to, that's too convoluted. But
right.
So, but I think if you keep more than emotional, you get drawn to emotional things. Oh, that's just I know. It sounds like I'm broadcasting from Michael Vick's house, but I swear I'm not.
There's a Georgia reference.
Anyway, sorry. No. Don't worry about me. I lose my train of thought anytime. So I think that's a lot of what makes your plot. So we don't feel like anything's telegraphed. I never know what's around the corner with you, and I think that's because of your approach to him. Really?
Yeah.
Well, then we're even, okay? So,
yeah.
Now I know a lot of people have asked you this. I'm sure they have. When you think of the people in your books, like Cahill, you've got to see it, I'm sure, and I know I might have asked you this before. You've got to see probably in terms of a film or a television show. If we were to try to picture, if you pictured an actor to play Cahill, who would it be?
Well, actually, I have thought of that because I would like some Hollywood money. But when I'm writing, I don't really see. I don't know specifically what Rick looks like. I don't know his specific facial features. He's got brown hair, I think. Brown. I'm not even sure what color his eyes are. Actually, he's 6 foot-ish, physically fit, but not a complete gym rat. But I don't really, I'm writing from first person, so I'm looking outward, and so I don't really know what he looks like. But when I think in terms of film, because, you know, please, someone ask me, I always thought of Mark Wahlberg because of his intensity, and I think he's a better actor than he's given credit for, and I think that when he does the dark stuff, he's at his best. There's always, to me, there's always some dark backstory lurking for him that it's there, but we don't know what it is. So that's a thought. But you know, I'm sure that if someone wanted to make a movie out of it, whoever they chose, I'd go with.
For a series. Tell me some of the, besides Chandler, tell me some of the television or movie detectives that you like to watch.
Well, my all-time favorite movie, and this probably says a lot about my outlook in life, is Chinatown. As John Huston would say, Mr. Gitz, but Jake Gitty's Nicholson's character. That's a genius movie, and if I could ever write anything that was that good, I'd be very happy. So for me, it's like there's nothing really on television that detective-wise that I would that's on much anymore, but that I would watch on network TV because it's not dark enough, and it's all episodic where you know everything gets solved each week, and you don't know that much about the character's life, and to me that's it's more interesting to know what's going on internally than so much wrapping it up in 60 minutes. But let's see. I always think of Rick, and I think of a lot of PIs as gunfighters in the Old West, because generally they're lone wolves, although there's obviously hugely successful mystery writers who have the PI's got a sidekick who's kind of a Superman type, but for me, it's more interesting when he's kind of he's the guy who's brought in. He's a lone wolf. He has to work on his own devices, and he has his own sense of justice. And sometimes that may not even match up with the person who hired him, but he has to be true to it. So I guess old westerns are more of an influence for me that way than anything on TV now.
You have to realize when you mention Western, I kind of go into a fugue state thinking of Adam Cartwright. So we're going to have to set that aside for right now so I can concentrate.
Which one? Adam Cartwright? Which one was Adam?
Pernell Roberts.
Oh, Pernell. Okay, because I'm thinking a little Joe, of course, Michael Landon. But
Nah, he's for the tourists. Purnell Roberts. When you know, I was reading different reviews of Blood Truth, your newest book, Blood Truth, and this was from Mystery People, and I'm going to read just little parts of this, if you don't mind. Matt Coyle understands mood and emotion is essential to a private eye novel. While delivering an engaging plot with plenty of action, his main ambition is getting into the head and heart of his tarnished knight, Rick Cahill. In his latest, Blood Truth, it's all personal. And then I'm going to skip down the past the description so that you can describe it. It says, like Reed Farrell Coleman, Matt Coyle is able to tap into that classic melancholy of the private detective. He realizes that a true hard-boiled hero isn't completely tough, and it's those vulnerabilities that draw us in as he struggles with his soul. For Coyle, it's not what lurks down those mean streets that pose the greatest threat for our hero. It's the loneliness one has walking down them.
Well, that's a great review by Scott Montgomery at Book People, who's anybody in the mystery business. What a great guy he is. But and to be mentioned with Reed Farrell Coleman's a huge compliment too. But I think he really nailed it. I mean, to me, he really nailed Rick there. That he is melancholy, and you can't seem to in some ways get out of his own way with that. And that's always a delicate balance, I think, for am I showing any growth with Rick as a character on the character arc over the series, where I think there's little gradations for him. But I think that for me, for my guy, that critique, that review by Scott completely nails it.
So he also skipped over the part where you describe, or where he describes, where Scott Montgomery describes the story, the plot of Blood Truth. So, would you share that with us in your words?
Sure. I'm sorry. I jumped in there and cut you off on that. That is such an understanding of what I'm trying to do in the character that which is not surprising with Scott because he is the mystery writer's best friend, but. Anyway, the story for me was, and for Rick, is the most personal of the four books. It's people who've started from the beginning know that Rick's father, before him, had been a cop for the La Jolla Police Department and lost his job, kicked off the force for reasons unknown, but the rumor had always been his father was affiliated with the mob and somehow bagged in for the mob. And not a good guy here when throughout his earlier life, he thought to have been the ultimate police officer and looked up to by everyone. And so this, aside from Rick's own problem as being a former police officer and being kicked off the force after his father, this has always bothered him. Rick is suspected of killing his wife 13 years ago. She was murdered. He was arrested, released, never tried, but never exonerated, and probably still thought by many to be responsible for killing his wife. So Rick has that own cloud. Then he has his father's. All his life, he's had this situation with his father. What kind of a man was he? Am I determined by my father's blood? Because Rick does some things that certainly break the law, and sometimes he does things not even in his own best interest, where he lets his anger take over and he wonders who am I and who really was my dad. And so in this book, in the beginning of the book, he's contacted by someone who bought the house he grew up in. It's been owned by someone else, but it's been 18 years since he'd been there. That was after his father's funeral. And this new guy who's tearing down the house to rebuild it, as people do, has found this safe in a room Rick knows was his father's den. So he's found this safe. It was a hidden safe behind a wall. And Rick gets it open and finds $15,000 in an envelope, like in hundreds and fifties, and a Saturday night special gun, a 25 caliber handgun missing two bullets. And So Rick wonders, what the hell is this, and what does it really mean? And it leads him on a path to find out the truth about his father. He, and in addition, solves a cold case murder. And for me, of course, this is something that I had to be fair to the readers, this is something I knew that I was going to have to figure out with the backstory I'd given in earlier books. And but I also wanted to do it for Rick, so he could kind of move past this one thing. He could have one thing in his life that he could move past. So I'd planned to write this book. I'm not very good at planning, but I had planned to write this book before I'd ended the third book, Dark Fishers. And after I finished Dark Fishers and was kind of getting my head together to write the next book, my father, who was 91, passed away. And it was a sudden death. He'd been incredibly healthy for a 91-year-old, but something happened and he died suddenly. So I was and he was I had a complicated relationship with him, I think, as all men my age did have with their parents and the certainly their fathers, men to father of the greatest generation. And but we became very good friends later in life, and he was a huge proponent of my writing. So there's a couple things going on. I'm writing this book. I'm dealing with my own grief in some ways when I'm writing in flashback about Rick's situation with his father. So it made those all the more poignant. But also, my father was kind of involved in some ways in the process of my writing, because he would like to see pages and he'd be kind of a cheerleader for me. So it was different. It was the first book I'd written without him kind of looking over my shoulder and patting me on the back, and as well as dealing with grief in some ways, and then also a contentious father-son relationship in some ways. So it was a very personal book. It was one of the few books that I actually kind of knew where I was going the whole way. Even though there's twists and turns I don't expect, but the tone of the book stayed. I mean, the tone of the book was how I wanted it, and the book really was the book I was trying to write. That's a long-winded answer.
That's a great answer. And, well, first of all, you know, I'm very sorry for the loss of your father. What an interesting story around it, though. And the effect... kind of the way how it sort of weaves in and out your grief and your writing and your relationship with him, and how that transformed or changed, or the different changes. And yeah, I understand what you're talking about. Interesting story. So are you on the road? I know you were at the LA Los Angeles Book Festival.
Festival
a couple
of
weekends.
Yeah.
Ago. Yeah, Festival of Books. Are you
no,
on,
not
are
not
you,
on the road? I'm sorry.
Yeah?
Go ahead.
Are you on the road on a book tour? Can we see you across the country?
No, the book tour is over. The book came out in December. Although, you know, things pop up. Things always pop up, which is great. I just did I did LA Times, and the week before that I did an event with Doug Lyle, Patty Smiley, and Robin Bursell for a great library organization in Anaheim, and where we had a lot of fun. So it's really cool. Things pop up throughout the year, and I'm always happy to do them. I'm also doing a library event in San Diego in June with a lot of great writers, so that's going to be fun. But no, I actually was on the road for my day job last week in St. Louis briefly, and had a fun story flying Southwest on the way home and getting delayed. But no, I'm hunkered down. I'm writing book five, which is going to be called Wrong Light, comes out this December. But I'm writing book six right now, which is Rick going back to Santa Barbara to eventually learn the truth about what happened to his wife. So I'm going to seal that one up too. That mystery has been floating around.
And that's in book six.
But I need to write. I need to write a little harder than I've been writing, unfortunately.
Do fans, do your readers ask you to tell them or to dig that story out or?
I don't know if I have any fans. I like to come across a fan. I've had other writers tell me, one in particular, that, hey, you gotta do this. I didn't really want to do it. I didn't want to do it. Book four, Blood Truth, was emotional in some ways. And so the next book I wrote, Wrong Light, which I said is coming out in December, that was, of course, for Rick, there's always emotion, but that was less personal. And so... you know, I'm on deadline. I got to write this book for book six, and I didn't have an idea. I never do. And so I was driving up to an event in Orange County. I'm in San Diego. Orange County is about an hour and a half. No, it wasn't Orange County. It was way up in L.A. It's way northern L.A. It's like a 2.5 hour drive. So I turned the radio off. This was a couple months ago. And I said, well, you know, I got to figure out what I'm going to write about. So I had doing a lot of thinking in my head, a lot of what if situations. And the story that just kept coming back at me, the one I did not want to write, was Rick goes to Santa Barbara and figures out what happens to his wife. And I wasn't ready to write that story. I'm still working into it emotionally, but it just was the one that kept pushing in. So that's what I'm writing about. And now that I've started, I'm happy to be doing it. But it's going to be a tough write because there's going to be a lot of emotion, too, for a couple of reasons for Rick. So I have to gear up for that sometimes. Plus, I have to go to Santa Barbara to get a better feel. I really realized how important it is for me to be in the city that I write about. I've written my first 5 books are all about San Diego, which is easy for me, but I still get out and drive around and look at things. And I went to school in Santa Barbara a long time ago, a lot of decades ago. Things have changed up there, of course. I've been a couple times since, but so I need to go up there, although I have been once before, while I was writing this, but I need to go up there in a couple of weeks and get a little more sense of the area because that really helps influence the writing. I get ideas from areas and things like that, subplots, stuff like that.
Where does the where do most of okay, I'm just gonna say I was gonna ask you where does Rick Cahill live? Where do most of his cases, adventures, misadventures take place?
He lives in San Diego. I can't give you the address of the house, but I know the house he lives in because it was an open house I walked through one day, probably 6 or 7 years ago. It wasn't the first place. It's the first home he's owned. It wasn't the first place he lived in. The first book he lived in somewhere very similar to where I lived. He lives in San Diego. Most of his adventures have to take place in various parts of San Diego. I try to find an iconic place for a scene to be, for it to make sense. So I've tried to do that throughout each book. But he's a San Diego guy, and he did go to school in Santa Barbara, and he was a cop up there for 3 years before he got booted off the force.
Okay. If you want to get booted off the force, that's always... All the best detectives are the ones that got kicked off, booted off.
That's right.
That's
well,
what
he deserves
really
to be.
What?
He deserves to be, actually. So he earned it.
Listen, if you're listening to us live right now, I don't have very long left. So if you want to talk to, Rick Cahill. If you want to talk to Matt Coyle, call in the number 646-716-9922, or if you're at a day job and you can't get a call out, you can always message him, like a lot of folks do. Matt Coyle, best-selling author, winner of the Anthony Award, the Benjamin Franklin Silver Medal, the San Diego Book Award, and is a Seamus McCavity and Lefty Award finalist as well. And I feel like Larry King saying all that after the number.
Well, that's
right. I like to say it. So, so I was going through Book Reporter, the Book Report Network. Yeah, they were listing all this, and they have all your books here and the plot on there. So if you want to know what to get started with, they're all there. Yesterday's Echo. And I want to give a shout out to my friend Keith Edenfield because he's read that because he won it last year when you were on. You gave away a book. Keith won it, which was good because he just had an ankle surgery, so he was laid up and he was great to have something good to read. And now he's a fan. The second book was Night Tremors.
Great.
Third, Dark Fissures. And of course, Current Blood Truth. And the next book comes out in. Did you say in December?
December. Yeah.
And
wrong
is
line.
That wrong line? Okay. And
wrong line. You
know,
first of all, I will. If someone does call, if someone calls in, I'll give away a book for sure. But do you notice the similarities between all those titles? They're all two words. And
yeah.
So in the first book, the first book, the title. The titles all come kind of organically from the work. So it was Yesterday's Echo made sense. But then my publisher wanted two word titles ever since then. So that is a challenge every time to come up with two words for each book. And I never have the title until I'm done with the book. And so I have no idea what the title of this one I'm writing now is going to be, but hopefully I'll figure it out by the end.
Okay. All right. Yeah, they seem to like these things where they kind of like go on with everything's going to be a two word or some kind of a, I guess, seems to have a similarity or a rhythm for it, for the titles. Hey, you also have, talk to us about your podcast.
Yeah, I do Authors on the Air. I do a podcast. I'm not real good with being specifically every 2 weeks. The idea is every 2 weeks a month, every two Fridays. I'm sorry, but sometimes for me the writing and the day job get in the way, so I'm a little behind. But actually, this Friday, and it's on 6 o'clock West Coast time, and it's called Crime Corner with Matt Coyle. And I try to, although I've only had mystery authors on, I've also had mystery fans on, and because the idea, all of crime interests me, so I'm going to try to have some, district attorneys, but assistant district attorneys on, and maybe try to get somebody, and people who write true crime as well, and try to get maybe somebody from like 48 Hours or Dateline. But this Friday, I'm going to have Baron Bircher, who's a really good writer, and his latest book is Fistful of Rain, which just came out. So it's a lot of fun. It's as you know, it takes some preparation, but I do enjoy it. I didn't think I was going to enjoy it. Pam Stack asked me if I wanted to do it, and I said sure.
Great.
Because I couldn't turn down the opportunity just to get in front of more people. But I really do enjoy it. I've really had some great guests, and it's a lot of fun when I don't screw it up technically.
Oh, I'm sure you don't. Yeah, and Pam's a great one. She kind of helped nurture me into the podcast world, and I'm very grateful to her. And she's a fantastic promoter and supporter of authors.
Yeah. Yeah, she is very good.
So, yeah, great. So, so you say you do it about every 2 weeks. And what kind of, so you said you were looking for some other guests, like, who do you want? Who can I get for you? I have Art Harrison on sometimes, and Art Harris is an investigative, a two-time Emmy winner from, investigative journalist from CNN, HLN, and he's on Sirius XM with Nancy Grace. You want Art? I'll get you Art.
Maybe I should talk to you about that. Yeah, I think there's a DA in Orange County that I'm going to try to get on. I haven't really talked specifically to him, but he's been on a lot of Datelines, 48 Hours. He's had some pretty big cases. And I would actually like to get somebody on regarding the Golden State Killer, but I haven't reached out to anybody yet. Because all facets of crime interest me, for sure. But I do like talking to mystery writers.
Yeah, I do as well. And always one or two. Sometimes, what is it called? The city novels. I think Dominic Dunn might have written one or two where it's based on a true story, but you have to pretend like it's like you're just writing fiction and put your story out there. Yeah, exactly. Or worse. What do you talk about a lot on Crime Corner? Do people call in? Do you just?
As you probably know, you have a lot of listeners, but people are kind of shy about calling in. So I will get a stray call in, even though I asked if anybody wants to. But generally, I'll have somebody on. We'll talk about their book, their latest book, and then a little bit about the nuts and bolts of how they're writing, how they got into writing, and. You know, Baron's interesting because he has a musical background, so we'll talk a little bit about that. For me, it's a learning experience. Anytime I have a guest on, I ask questions that interest me, and hopefully they interest the audience too, because I'm trying to learn, and I'm kind of a naturally curious person, so I just ask things that I think are interesting, and I try not to I'm sure I come up with a lot of questions they've already been asked, but I try to at least have a couple of originals. But you never know. I've been lucky. I've had a lot of great guests that do really give a lot of good information.
You know, it'd be fun. And talking about the Golden State Killer, I guess that would be, I don't know who you would, if there's somebody specifically you have in mind you want to talk to, you know, one of the people, of course, you would think of first would be Patton Oswalt.
Yeah, yeah. It's the whole thing is an amazing story. You know, he killed, when I went to school at UC Santa Barbara, he killed, I think, one or two couples in Goleta and surrounding areas, at least one couple, while I was there. Didn't know anything about it. Back then, I knew about the Zodiac Killer when I was, you know, I lived in San Diego. I knew about the Zodiac Killer. I got a lot of notoriety, but this guy was incredibly, horribly prolific in rapes and murders, but outside of Sacramento and maybe the Bay Area, we never heard about it. And today, that would never happen in today's 24-hour news, but it was for this kind of the volume of these horrific crimes this guy did, for someone like myself who follows true crime to not know about him until I started seeing things about a year ago is kind of fascinating to me. And I was talking to my sister-in-law who she and my brother live in Sacramento now, but she grew up in Sacramento. I said, hey, do you remember, I mean, when he was just a rapist, he was called the East Side Rapist. I said, do you remember when the East Side Rapist was going, you know, was out there? And she goes, yeah, I remember completely. We were scared to death. You know, everybody was closing all their windows and doors and had a huge impact. But to me, it's just so weird that it didn't have more of a, not even a national presence, but more of a California presence, that in Southern California, we didn't really know about him, even though he ended up committing crimes as far south as Irvine, which is just an hour north of here, hour and a half north of here.
Oh.
Can you hear
me?
Somebody's calling
me. Yeah, I was just thinking, when somebody's that close, you know, that close, it's, it does kind of, you know, gives you a creepy feeling because you're always looking over your shoulder. Of course, you know, I live in Atlanta, so anything could happen anywhere. But
we're in a major city. There's stuff going on that, you know, we don't even know about, I'm sure. Always lock the doors and the windows.
Yeah.
You always have to be aware of where you are, and even during the day when you're outside, you have to be aware of things around you. That's my little sermon for the day.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, and it's valuable. So if you, the Rick Cahill series, no matter what you modestly tell me, you know, you do have a lot of fans and a lot of readers. So if you ever veered from that, because every now and then, you know, some of the authors I have on who might write some kind of suspense thriller, whether it's crime or fantasy or something, every now and then they'll veer off into something else. And if you wrote something different in a different genre, you've thought about it, what would it be?
I honestly don't think I would write out a genre, to be honest with you. Of course, when I graduated from college 1,000 years ago, I thought I was writing the great American novel, which was awful. No, I think I would write something. I am going to write something different probably after I finish book 6. But I don't know what it is yet, but I am going to write something different. I am going to come up with a new character, if not a series, at least a standalone. And I sort of have an inkling, but it will be crime, but it will be different than what I'm doing now. But I haven't fleshed it out yet. But I read science fiction when I was a kid, but science fiction is really hard. You have to really come up like with a whole different world, and you have to be true to the laws of the world. And, it's a lot. I would think that's a lot of research for science fiction, but I enjoy science fiction. I did as a kid. I read a lot of Ray Bradbury, and that might be one. But I don't think I get that. I don't think I'm going to go outside of crime at this point.
I'm not going to make any judgments. I'm not wanting to get outside of crime. I'm not going to.
I'm stuck in crime. Maybe romance if I put a picture of myself on the cover, but I'd have a shirt on. So, something like that. Buttoned up to the very top.
have somebody
write me. Isn't there a market for middle-aged romance? Maybe that'll be it. Start a whole new genre, middle-aged romance.
Okay. Hey, you'd be surprised, okay? You don't think we middle-aged women want romance?
Oh, I know. I know, but you probably don't want to read about a middle-aged guy being romantic. Anyway.
Well, you know, it's like I've heard some men say that they don't want a thing about dating younger. They want somebody they could talk to after a while. You know, the young women are good for sometimes, but then they start wanting someone they can actually have a conversation with. So I don't know if they're just saying that or what. Well, what is your next?
I'm gonna leave that alone. Leave that alone. I'm sorry. Go ahead. As a divorcee, I'm gonna leave that alone.
You crack me up, Coyle. You really do. You okay? Now you've completely lost me here. Will we ever see? Do you think we're gonna ever see Cahill? Maybe after he solves or resolves the murder of his wife, do you think we'll ever see him get hitched, pair up, some kind of a romantic domestic partnership or something?
No, I don't think so. That would be different for me. That would be a challenge for me. He's had some romance in a few of the books, but I don't. That would mean he'd be. Well, anyway, I don't talk about my thoughts on marriage. I was going to say that would mean he'd be happy, but he could be miserable too. I would say probably not, but maybe there's hope for the guy.
Yeah, maybe. Okay. Well, we have a caller from Chicago, Peter G. Hi, Peter. Welcome back to Madame Perry Salon.
Hello. How you doing?
Doing great. I'm here talking to Matt Boyle about his, Matt, this is Peter. He's one of my favorite regulars, and I guess, Peter, you know, we've been talking about his newest book, Blood Truth, in the Rick Cahill series. And Peter's an animator. Peter, you haven't done any animation on crime thrillers, have you?
No, not yet. It's something that I've thought about in my daydreams for an animated movie. I would want to do it as like the ultimate noir flick. So lots of like, I don't know if you're familiar with what they call the Dark Deco. Batman the Animated Series used it. So the Dark Deco look, lots of black and white and shades of gray, and just make it a real. It's a little beyond my capabilities right now, is the problem.
Well, black and white and shades of gray, that is noir for sure.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. To my mind, I have different genres that I'm interested in. Like, I mostly write comedies or I write different things. For my money, crime noir or just mysteries in general are the best way to explore human nature, because all mysteries stem from here's something that somebody so desires that they're willing to step outside their normal ethical boundaries in order to get it and then try and hide it so no one can find out what happened. So it's all about that dark side of human nature, about the passion, about desire. And you can just so much, explore so much with it.
Exactly.
Hey,
right.
Hold
up. That's why,
a minute, Peter. Peter, you're getting too close to the truth of my life, okay? hey, don't give anything away, Peter. Whatever you know is not true. Matt.
So the story about you. I was going to say, so the story about you, the ocelot, and the hay baler, I should ignore that, right?
I'm going to move on because, okay, Matt is giving away a book tonight to a caller, and you're a caller, Peter?
Oh, hello.
I think that means you're something new to read.
Wonderful. Sounds wonderful. You're talking to a guy who stays away from Barnes & Noble because he'll walk in to get, like, a latte from Starbucks. And he'll come out with two giant bags full of books.
Oh, okay.
And, like, where am I even going to put these things?
I know
well, we'll see. Now you've got another. Hey, and also on the line, another one of my favorite suspense writers, calling in from Colorado, Mr. Brett Wright. Brett, welcome to Madam Perry Salon. We're talking to Matt Coyle here. I know you made a comment on our post about this yesterday. And Yeah.
All right. Hey, where am I sitting?
How you doing? Thanks for calling.
Sit on the other side of me, Brett.
All right. We'll just do that. So, Matt, hi.
Yeah. Hi.
So yeah, I couldn't wait to get on the line. A fellow writer, fellow div novelist. That's amazing. I've just been sort of listening here for the last couple of minutes. I liked what you had to say about exploring, you know, the dark side of human, of the human soul. Basically, that was you're absolutely right with that, about setting that kind of feel in a book, especially in the PI genre.
Well, I think that was the other caller, and he should probably get the whole hour because he was more believable.
I probably got you confused. That's what I get. See, I was on the road.
Definitely is the way the interest for me in writing mysteries, and specifically in first person, is the battle with oneself. There's always going to be exterior battles for the PI, but the internal struggle is for me the most interesting, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, do you find that when you're writing in first person, you're in that headspace? Do you find yourself also battling, putting your own psyche on the page for all to see?
Hmm. No, I don't really. I mean, I think everything has to come from true emotion. I think that, obviously, I've my life's pretty boring. I haven't been a cop. I haven't been a private investigator. I haven't been a soldier. I haven't been a doctor. I haven't been a lawyer. But I'm of a certain age, I think, where everybody on the phone right now is, where you've had a lot of pain and loss in your family, with family life, whatever. So when there's something that may be violent with a, bad outcome in the books I'm writing, I can pull from my own sense of loss and get the true emotion without having the same experience. So if the emotions are true, I think that the reader will feel the truth in it. But no, I don't worry about. I do try to pull out that part of it, but I don't worry about my inner psyche showing up. I think I sort of know this guy. I mean, I've only got four books out, five soon to be out, but I've actually been writing this character for 15 years. It took me, I think, 10 years to get published initially. So I sort of have a decent grasp on him. But, I mean, there's a lot of me in him for sure. But I don't worry about that. I don't worry about exposing myself. I mean, if you're a writer, your stuff's out there anyway. They're going to figure out who you are.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Can I jump in with a quick question?
Yeah.
All right, by me.
I just don't want to interrupt anybody. One thing I'm wondering about, because there's different genres like science fiction, fantasy, and stuff like that. And for me, at least, my favorites in those genres are usually some kind of mystery, because you got people who are dealing with the unknown. So it may be ostensibly be a science fiction story, but it's still in a roundabout way either a situational mystery or a mystery of who's doing something terrible that they have to stop. Have you ever considered branching out into other genres, but using mystery as the foundation to build these new worlds?
Jennifer asked me about that, but actually, no. I've read science fiction. I read a lot of science fiction when I was younger, I will probably, even with new characters, new ideas, I will probably stick in crime. And basically for the reason you came up with earlier is that, it's so interesting to me that the inner, the darkness of, the human spirit in some ways. But you make a great point, though, and I think all literature, even if it's not a mystery, there is suspense. There is there's always got to be tension on every page, even in comedic stuff, right? But for me, mm-hmm. I'm going to stick in my lane and try to get better at it and have some different angles I come from. But I'll stay in crime.
Let's take that little sound bite out. I'll stay in crime, Matt Coyle said. And let's put that in the promo. Okay. And if you're still listening, or if you just dialed in or just plugged in, we're talking to thriller author Matt Coyle. And you've only got about 3 minutes left to call and talk to him if you want to. Hey, guys, I'm so glad. You know, Peter, the animator and comic strip artist and writer for Bleeding Cool, Peter G here, he's one of our Madam Perry's biggest fans and listeners. And so is Brett R. Wright here. And Brett, I don't know what you might have heard, Matt, but there was a time about a year ago when Brett and his friend Rick Cornell did come in. We had some bad blood going on because they left some burritos under the cushions and they were a little smelly. But we got to clean
that. It was a regular food fight, right?
Yeah. His book is books are called his detective is Nasty, and that seems so fitting. It's not about Janet Jackson. It's but
an interesting guy.
Yes. So I am just so glad that you've come here. Now listen, if you're new to Matt Coyle, or if you want to tell you, he's got Rick Cahill series is very popular, and start with the book Yesterday's Echoes, Night Tremors, Dark Fissures, and the current book Blood Truth. As and if you're really jonesing for some more Rick Cahill after reading Blood Truth, and I have had some people comment back to me that I've already read this, well, the next one is coming out, Wrong Life is coming out in December, and he's already writing the sixth one, which means that you care about your readers. You're giving them hope that they got more to read from you. All right. So where can people, in the last couple of minutes, where can people find out more about you? What is your website and any social media?
Yeah, my website's mattcoylebooks.com. Social media, I'm basically on Facebook, Matt Coyle. You'll see dogs. There's pictures of my dog, Angus, on the couch. That's basically that. It's as deep as it gets. But I do like to occasionally put some writing stuff up there. And I'm on Twitter. I'm at Coyle M, I think. I know how to retweet. That's about the best I can do on Twitter. But I do retweet things, but, you know. But okay. If anybody, my email's on my website, so I always respond to emails. So I'm happy to, or engage me on Facebook, happy to talk to anybody.
All right. And again, Matt Coyle, best-selling author, winner of the Benjamin Franklin Silver Medal, San Diego Book Awards, and a Seamus McCavity Lefty Award finalist. And he's got a degree in English, for the love of Pete, you know, from the University of California, Santa Barbara. And just so glad to have you here. Hey, you know what we should do, guys? Because now that it's almost the end of our time, we got about 1 minute left with Matt. 90 seconds, the woman says. You know what we should do? Brett and Peter and anybody listening, we should show up. Matt has a podcast called Crime Corner. Comes on about every 2 weeks. We should show up over at his podcast. Would that be okay, Matt?
Absolutely. Baron Bircher, Friday night, 9 East Close Time, 6 Pacific.
Okay. That'd be fun. Heck yeah.
It's called Crime Corner.
Sorry,
oh, listen,
It's
what now?
Oh, I said, I'm sorry, I showed up a little bit late this time. I was on the road from Denver, so, you know, that didn't work.
Oh, Brett, we're glad you pulled in the driveway just in time to get on here with us, so thanks a lot. So we're going to all meet up over at we're going to meet up on Matt's podcast. It's called Crime Corner. I thought he said Crime Corner at first because of the crime, but it's Crime Corner. And
sometimes.
We can all meet. Yeah, well, and join in. And thank you all so much for listening. Hey, by the way, if you're an indie author and want to promote your books and you can't afford a publicist, get my book. It's called Sell Your Books Today, and it's 99 cents right now. It's a bargain. And guys, I'm going to be in an overnight shoot tomorrow night, speaking of crime, playing a funeral director for House on Haunting of Hill House. So, hey, who knows?
How fun.
Congrats. Who knows? I might be in the background and you might see my elbow when it comes out on TV, okay? But at least we'll know they're trying to make something happen. And I just want to thank everybody for listening. I want to thank Matt Coyle for being here again. I just think you're wonderful, and thank you so much. It's an honor to have you here. Brett Wright, you better be coming back soon. And Peter G., I love having you here as well. And I'm going to send everybody out with a little song that I wrote called Everybody's Got to Sing. I love you all.
Mother Goose.